You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Across the state of Wisconsin, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie is back.
It's 8:06 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Parker, very nicely played. Little Guns N' Roses, Welcome to the Jungle.
Sometimes.
I love that.
Yeah, it feels like a
very
jungle.
Nice.
Man, is it time for kickoff?
Hey, we can kick off, yeah.
Every stadium ever.
That's such a great song. Welcome to the Jungle, Guns N' Roses, before Axl Rose got old. That's how I always equate.
I was going to say, or before he got crazy, but that was just always.
Always, I was going to say, always.
Are there three stages of Guns N' Roses?
Yes.
Before he got old, after he got old,
yes,
and after he went crazy?
That's essentially what it is. Absolutely. My name is Jamie Martinson. Frank Gargano, our senior producer, joins me today, sitting in for Brian Noonan. And of course, if you're listening in Wausau on WXCO, got to do a little shout out across the state, in La Crosse on WLCX, Hayward on WBZH, or in Wisconsin Rapids on WFHR. Thank you so much for joining us. Hey, Parker, the sun is coming out now. I don't know if you noticed this, but the sun is indeed trying to shine this morning in Madison.
I told you. I'm going to a softball game.
I was looking at the forecast. Some on and off showers throughout today, possible in large portions of the state. Heat, humidity over the next couple of days. And then, of course, that's going to give way to some possible severe weather tomorrow and potentially on Thursday. So please stay weather aware over the next couple of days. And if you have to be outside, I know it seems so stupid, but if you have to be outside with that humidity, even if the temperature doesn't seem super warm, it's going to feel super warm. So please, please take it easy if you are going to be outside. That is my little PSA for the morning, folks. We wanted to talk this morning about where we're at in this country, right? Like, what is more important to you? A candidate's character or their policies. Because it turns out that there's a lot of candidates right now who are running for office who have some questionable things in their backgrounds, right? And in 2026, it doesn't really seem to be a game changer for whether or not we still support these candidates, like maybe even 5 to 10 years ago that it did. Political scandal that once ended campaigns no longer guaranteed to derail a candidate's career. Political scientists actually say that voters at this stage are more likely to stick with candidates from the preferred party, even when those candidates face serious allegations or controversies. Now, it's interesting because it was actually just late last year that we had a candidate running for Wisconsin state governor, Republican Bill Berrien. He had to end his campaign, though. Parker, you obviously remember this. I'm looking at your face.
Yesterday, I was trying to remember who all the candidates were, and I was like, God,
yeah,
there were more Republicans.
I
knew there was. I couldn't remember his name because of this.
So Bill Berrien ended his 2026 campaign, just a little, you know, take you back in time moment, because there was controversy surrounding reports of his online activity that involved explicit social media accounts. And so he just dropped out of the race. He tried to stay in for a few days after those reports came to the light, and then eventually it just became too much. And then that's actually when we saw Tom Tiffany step into the race and become the front runner for the Republican Party. There's also been a lot of legislative leaders in the state of Wisconsin who've resigned over inappropriate comments, state officials that leave their positions following misconduct or investigations. The question is, though, does that matter to us in this current climate? So again, the question this morning, what's more important to you, a candidate's character or their policies? 1-855-752-4842, 1-855-75-CIVIC. Now, there's also a lot of people who claim that this increasing political polarization, stronger partisan identities, and declining trust in traditional media is a major reason why scandals have less impact than they once did. In previous decades, scandals that involved affairs, JFK, hello, anybody? Personal misconduct, ethics violations, or controversial behavior led politicians to resign or completely abandon campaigns. I mean, should we talk about Gary Hart from like 2011 for just a few minutes? I mean, Yeah, I mean, let's you think about it.
Take your pick.
I mean, even during Trump's first term, Al Franken is a great example of that. When those photos that eventually we were found were not real photos, and he left office. Now you kind of wonder, should he have wrote it out? Were the Democrats at that point too persistent that he should leave his role and leave office? Would it have mattered to most voters?
At that time, though, but we play, that's assuming that everybody plays by the same set of rules, right?
This is true.
I think that's really important to look at. I think at that point in time, it was probably the right thing to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Looking back on it, yeah, with the current political climate,
yeah,
he probably could have stayed, probably should have stayed. But let's not pretend like a senator from Minnesota is held to the same standards as,
right,
just spitballing here, maybe somebody that resides in the White House or is the Speaker of the House. We have very different rules.
Is it the parties, though, too? Right? Because we've talked about this.
Yeah.
The Republicans,
it's the following.
It will. The Republicans usually fall in line. If that is their candidate, it doesn't usually matter what scandals persist with that particular candidate. They will usually fall in line and still support that candidate unless it just becomes too egregious that they can't stand it anymore, right?
There's, Jamie, I think another thing, sorry to cut you
no,
off,
no,
but
please.
I think we, and we've talked about this a lot too, when it comes to the Democratic side, is you need to have a very squeaky clean persona,
yes,
right? You need a squeaky clean backstory because it's, I'll just say it, it's impossible,
right,
to unite the Democratic Party on everything.
Right. Absolutely.
Even when you may be the lesser of two evils, where the Republican side, you have to give them credit. When they all agree this is the person we're going for, they kind of view it as almost like a sporting event,
yeah,
or a game or a contest where it's like, this is our team.
Right.
And we want to win.
Yeah.
This is who we're supporting. Where I think a lot of Democrats look at politics as the nuanced thing that it is and go, well, I don't agree with that person. And
right,
maybe it's to a fault where I don't agree with everything, therefore I'm not voting for that person, or I'm just not voting at all.
Sometimes I wonder if it's not so much that we're more tolerant of these scandals or that the parties have completely different identities and different standards. I don't,
yes,
know if it's so much as being, you know, just like, yes, we're okay voting for this person with a scandal, or just the Democrats saying, no, you need to be the better person here. We don't want these tied to the Democratic Party. We're going to have this person step down. So sometimes I wonder if it's more of a party thing than an actual candidate thing, and our tolerance level is maybe different. But candidates today are more likely to deny allegations, frame controversies as political attacks, and also continue campaigning rather than step aside. And we're actually seeing this play out right now in the state of Maryland with Graham Plantner, right?
Yep.
He has been embroiled in scandals involving women. He has been embroiled in scandals involving tattoos when he first came onto the political scene. He has one that is a swastika that was eventually covered. He's had to explain that numerous times. Yet he still stays in the race. And even with the latest scandals involving women, he has made it clear. He is not stepping down. He is not leaving the race. He is going to let the voters decide. And, you know, that is a very, and let's be clear, he is not an establishment, we'll put that in air quotes, a Democrat. The Democrats actually put up an establishment candidate to run against him in Maryland. That establishment candidate lost, and Plantner is now your candidate in the state of Maryland. So I wonder, mm-hmm, though, if taking the playbook of more Republicans and saying, I'm going to just stay in this, even with all of this swirling around me. I mean, it worked for President Trump, right? He got elected just a week or two after the Entertainment Tonight video back in 2016. That didn't seem to derail his campaign at all. You know, if you think about even 10 years prior to that, if that tape would have come out that close to an election, Hillary Clinton would have won in a landslide, right? I mean,
but what changed, I guess? Is it the fear-mongering of It's if you're looking at it from a Republican side, what is the Democratic utopia look like? Socialism, communism, and we're going to vote for our guy or girl to combat that and anti-trans rhetoric.
Sure.
I think there's a lot of social aspects that come into that decision where they do ignore what the real issues are in terms of scandal, because scandal doesn't really exist right now, especially when it comes to a presidential race.
And I want to point out and correct myself, Tony, thank you so much in our chat.
It is Maine.
Thank you very much. I had that written down and then my brain went somewhere else. But a lot of today's candidates really are following this denial of the allegations. And analysts say that the modern media environment is also playing a bit of a role. You know, obviously, social media plays a role into that. There's partisan news sources. There's constant information flows. Scandals a lot of times are compete with dozens of other stories for our attention. And you got to wonder at some point in time if it just gets lost, or if we start going, well, is that really real? Because you don't know if everything that you see online is real. And you have to wonder if that sometimes plays into it, into the mindset of the voter, right? Do we question the authenticity because what we see is not actually real all the time? And I don't know if that's what makes up the mind of voters. But if you're interested in chiming into this conversation this morning, we'd love to hear from you. Do you think a candidate's character is more important or their policies? 1-855-752-4842, 1-855-75-CIVIC. We've got Jeannie on the phone this morning. She's calling in from Eau Claire. Jean, how are you this morning? And what do you got for us?
Well, thank you so much for covering this subject. Definitely policy matters to me, because what we have in the Oval Office right now, I'll tell you something, nothing compares, and that guy's doing it in our face. So I really believe that we need some very strong people fighting back, and also their background, like Tiffany. We need to look at his background and what he did in the past and what he's done all along, and all the people that have an R after their name. And I've been an independent my entire life, but I've been watching for years live what these people have been doing to our state and to our country. So definitely policy, but character too, and not lies. So thank you very much, and you have a great day.
Thank you very much for the call. Thanks, Jean. We appreciate it. Of course, you know, you got to wonder too, if the current president is part of this shift, right? He survived so many controversies. He has said things in the past that would have taken any other candidate out of office. He has actually used it to his advantage, right? In a lot of ways, to basically endear himself not only to the voting base, but also to new voters, because he isn't the typical politician. Whether you agree with him or not, whether you agree with his policies, he has endeared himself to a certain subsect of voters that a lot of politicians haven't been able to over the years. It's fascinating. We'll continue to have this conversation on the stream. But the debate over a proposed data center in Wisconsin Rapids is growing. Community groups are organizing. We're going to talk about that next and find out what's happening in Wisconsin Rapids on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Local voices, statewide impact. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:22 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We always appreciate it. Hopefully you're having a great start to your day. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. I am Jamie Martinson. Brian Noonan is not here today, but our senior producer, Frank Gargano, stepping in as co-host. How's it going? Are you enjoying your time as host?
You know what? It's so different just constantly being on. I check myself in the camera, like when I'm taking sips of coffee and be like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, right. Maybe don't eat while you're on camera.
Oh, no. I eat all the time while I'm on camera. Our poor, we'd probably do much better on a stream if I wasn't always eating or moving around, but it's fine. But we have a guest joining us today because we've got to have a conversation about data centers. There is a proposed center that's become one of the most talked about issues in Wisconsin Rapids. Community groups have formed, hundreds of residents have attended informational meetings, and city leaders have slowed the approval process so they can gather more information and public input to help us understand where things currently stand, what's known about the project, and what questions residents are still asking. We are joined by Melissa Kay. She is the news director for WFHR and WIRI in Wisconsin Rapids. Now, Melissa, you've been closely following this story from the beginning, so we are super glad that you are here this morning. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Jamie and Frank. Thank you for having me on. I'm glad to be here.
Well, let's go ahead and jump right into this, because for listeners who haven't been following this closely, bring us up to speed. Why has this particular proposed data center generated so much attention in Wisconsin Rapids?
Well, part of it has to do with the location. As many know, Wisconsin Rapids is a former paper mill city. This city was grew because of the paper mill that was here that was shut down quite a few years ago. And then that site has just sat empty. But it's unique because it's right next to the river. They've done clearing of the space, so now there's acreage available for manufacturing opportunities. But it's zoned manufacturing industrial, so it can't have housing. It can't have, you know, there's certain things that can't be built there. And data center companies have been looking at that site. In 2024, there was a data center company that was looking, not exactly that site, but near that area. And it was very quiet. They came in with a contract, let the city know, hey, these two private entities are doing this thing. But then a year later, they also let them know by press release that, hey, yep, we're not doing the thing.
Right.
But people were okay with it then because they didn't really know what was happening. Now, the city council realized that, hey, if we don't put an ordinance in place to have some protection against, have some involvement in this, we won't be able to. It'll be just like before with a agreement between two private entities, and we're not involved. So that's kind of where things kicked off here with getting the public involved.
Sure.
Because they were like, whoa, 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 what are you doing? Creating ordinances for data centers. It's like, well, there's more to it than that. It's for protection purposes. So now there's a company interested. People are getting informed, involved, and being activists in their community. They're like, hey, we're not sure if we want this. Let's talk about it. Let's slow it down. Let's look at all of the different things. Look at what's happening across the nation and in other parts of Wisconsin with data centers.
So let's go to the Southwood County Neighbors for Responsible Development. This is a group that has formed just a few weeks ago. Am I correct on that?
In April.
Okay.
So.
And they seem to be drawing large crowds. And how did they come into this mix, and what is their role in what's happening with the data center in Wisconsin Rapids?
Well, there was a public hearing announced for the conditional use permit that this company had submitted to the city. And the Southwood County Neighbors for Responsible Development, to my understanding, they're just a group of people in the area, business owners. They're like, hey, whoa, 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 let's have an informational session. So they invited people from the IT world, Farmers Union, and even Charlie Behrens came to town. They had an informational session at the middle school here. It had about over 400 people attended, including the mayor and alderpersons. They were there to gather information too. And so that is really what kicked off the Southwood County Neighbors for Responsible Development Group, and they've been working ever since to educate.
Sure. Melissa Kay, news director for WFHR and WIRI in Wisconsin Rapids, joins us this morning. So is the opposition to the data center in Wisconsin Rapids focused on the idea of the data center itself, or are residents more concerned about the location and some of those impacts to things like the environment, obviously their own utility bills? What seems to be their argument right now?
That seems to be the big one. People are worried about energy bills, their electricity, and our water. Our waterways here, yes, the mill did do some pollution, obviously, in eras gone by. but they're worried now because a lot of cleanup has been done. The riverway is much better than it was, and they don't want to see it degraded again.
Absolutely. So,
Melissa, real quick, hold on, Jamie. I feel like we always see the negative side of data centers, and we see a lot about the opposition to it. Are there groups right now in the community that maybe support the data centers for any reason? Are there any benefits to this?
Well, honestly, from what I've heard, the biggest benefit would be building out our electric infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So the infrastructure would be improved over time because they want to start with one 50 megawatt building and they want to expand to 150 megawatts of power that will be needed to be able to accommodate that amount of power. They have to build out the infrastructure that would involve, you know, the different utility companies. And I think that the city council, or at least what they have said to me, is that they want, this is an opportunity. They need to figure out the way to do it the best that's going to protect the consumers while building out our infrastructure. And then also make sure utility bills don't go up. But it could be a benefit if the consumers can be protected.
Thank you so much for joining us. Melissa Kay, news director for WFHR and WIRI in the Wisconsin Rapids area. We will continue to follow this story out of Wisconsin Rapids. Melissa, thank you so much for being
thank
here
you,
this
Jamie.
Morning. We appreciate it. Coming up, summer camps and youth programs in high demand across Wisconsin. A lot of families are running into long wait lists and rising costs. We'll explain why that matters next. You're on Daybreak. You're listening to the Civic Media Network.
Wisconsin wakes up here. Back to Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Civic Media Network. It is 8:35 right now. My name is Jamie Martinson. Brian Noonan is out today, but I am joined by our fabulous senior producer, Frank Gargano. How do you feel on the other side of the chair today? Like, this is a serious question because I've been in your seat, right? Like, I've been the producer. And so it's very weird when you have to, like, join the show and all of a sudden you're there.
I've noticed, like, I don't get to, because I do many things during the show when I'm not. I'm looking at emails, I'm looking at stories, people to book, all that stuff. And I get a lot done during the show. Well, because I kind of get to just be a consumer.
Right.
Because that's the best way to judge a show is from a listener standpoint.
And if you're
not
entertained, then that
standpoint.
Probably means that our listeners are entertained, right?
Correct.
Yes.
So
yes.
Like, it's so weird that I'm dialed in and then I look down and we were just saying during break, like, oh my God, it's 8:35.
It is. It's gone really, really fast. That's a little inside for all of you non-radio folks who just enjoy the show and listen on a daily basis.
But it's fun. I'm enjoying it.
Well, good. I'm learning a lot. Thank you for stepping in today.
Of course.
Now, you know, if you're the type of person who ended up as a kid going to summer camp, hopefully you have some really fond experiences that you've taken with you for, you know, maybe a lifetime. Sometimes it was day camp. Sometimes it was a sports camp. Might have even been scout camp or just a summer program that was through your local school. Those activities, though, gave kids a chance to learn, make friends, and stay active while school was out. Today, a lot of Wisconsin families are discovering that those opportunities are becoming really difficult to find. In fact, a new study shows that demand for summer programs is growing, but a lot of parents are also running into high costs, long wait lists, and limited availability. And a lot of families are now struggling to access these resources for their kids during the summer. According to this study, about one in every two kids whose parents want them enrolled in a summer learning or enrichment program cannot get access to one in their local communities. Now, let me ask you, were you a camp kid? Did you have to go to any camp or any of the enrichment activities?
You lost me at the word camp. Let me tell you something. I'm very much a city boy. I like sitting inside in air conditioning.
Okay.
Doing city boy things. I like video games. I love going outside. I loved going outside and playing baseball with the other neighborhood kids, football, whatever. As far as camping goes, I'm not an outdoorsman by any stretch of the imagination. Heights. Yes. No.
No.
Camping.
Not so much.
No, it's just not me.
You didn't do like football camp or anything?
Yeah, I did football camp, and it's miserable.
Well, I know
football
that,
camp's
but...
the worst.
That doesn't sound fun.
I don't think there's anything worse. Like, now you've got me on.
Uh-oh.
Now you've got me going. Let me tell you something. there are many things I wish I could turn back the clock on to go do. Playing football games in high school, I'd love to play another game.
Sure.
Put the pads on. But if that meant going back to football camp, I wouldn't do it. It would be a no every single time because those were the worst days in the world.
Sports camps aren't generally meant to be fun, right? Like, they're generally not Parker camp for you. You're not done? Okay, go.
All the basketball players got to have fun. They'd shoot around in the summer. We did camp for a week. We did shoot arounds and we did some drills. It was a lot of fun. The baseball players were like, this is our off season. We get to enjoy.
Well, yeah, they just wrapped up their season like a month before that.
We get to enjoy our summer and people are sleeping in. They're like, what are you doing? We're like, what do you mean? I have to wake up at 5:30 tomorrow morning to go lift and then we have to go run and then I've got to go put on my pads in 100-degree summer weather and hit the guy in front of me for 3 hours straight, and we're still going to lose most every game this coming fall.
Well, now that is what my summer looks like. What kind of attitude is that? Yeah. My God.
That was I am realistic, if anything, Jamie, and that was the reality. But no, I'm not a camp person, but for anybody that is, I think that's great for you. I think you should have summer camps that are fun, that you enjoy doing, but it's kind of interesting to see that summer camps are turning into more of a luxury than anything.
They are, because it used to be a staple, right? Like, it was one of those things you sent your kids to, even your local school where there was enrichment, daily activities, right? Mm-hmm. That was a thing. I did several camps as I got older that were more tailored to the things I was interested in. Now, I don't know if it would surprise the two of you to know, but I spent a glorious week at South Dakota State University at a journalism camp.
Wow.
I've been a counselor for a journalism camp.
See?
Mm-hmm. What?
You were about to make fun of me. I could feel it. And Parker one-upped me on that one. Mm-hmm. I was just an attendee.
Well, now I'm going to make fun of both of you.
Hey, who wins this one? We weren't hitting big guys across from us lifting weights at 5:30.
Well,
we were sitting in an air-conditioned room.
I was going to say, were you in high school?
Yes, high school. I was in high school.
Well, while you were you were a narc, Parker. You were a counselor.
Yeah.
Yes, I went to debate camp as well. I don't know if that would surprise the two of you either.
Then you one up Parker again. And Jamie takes the crown back for nerdiest comment of the day.
Yeah.
Parker.
Thank you, Parker.
Yeah, exactly. Parker, going back to being a counselor at journalism camp, did any of the kids raise their hand and go, do you have a job in journalism? And you're like, don't worry about that. Shut up. You don't know what you're talking about.
I worked at the student paper, and it was the college that ran the camp.
Sure.
So, yeah, I was kind of.
It was a great experience because at South Dakota State, we not only met the professors from South Dakota State, but then they brought in a couple of nationally known journalists to do workshops with us. So it was really an awesome experience. Then we also the next year got access to our politicians who were serving in local government on the state level. So that was also really, really cool to be able to go spend a day with them, intern, and then get access to newsrooms across the state through that particular camp.
Look at how excited you're getting.
I know. It was so exciting. But when it comes to camps right now in Wisconsin, families are saying that cost is the biggest obstacle for kids to have some of these same experiences, right? Along with transportation challenges and a lack of openings in their communities. 177,000 Wisconsin families say that they cannot find a summer program that's even affordable, close to home, or accessible for their kids. Now, summer camps and youth programs across the state fill up really quickly, and a lot of organizations are reporting lengthy wait lists. Wisconsin Youth Company increased enrollment by about 300 children this summer compared to last year, but still has another 300 children waiting for a spot. And obviously, when school lets out, there's a whole new challenge for parents, too, because there's no longer that year-round place for your kids to go. And if they're school-aged, then you really have to figure out where your kids are going to go. And for some parents, there's also that the year-round daycare also ends when the school year ends. So parents really do become in a pinch because parents can't just take off work because their kids don't have anywhere to go. And if we're talking about these types of wait lists, and I would be interested to know, Why are there so many wait lists? Is it just because of the need or because it's harder to find people to work in these programs all summer long? Or what? Why are we seeing such wait lists, I guess would be my next question for some of these programs. Because it seems like for anybody maybe going into teaching, and maybe the pay isn't that great, right? If you're going to be a teacher, maybe you need something that pays a little bit more than what some of these programs can. They don't offer any reasons as to why the wait lists exist right now.
I mean, look at camp culture. How much is that declined?
Sure.
Because it isn't, you know, we're in the digital age now where camp culture isn't really a thing, I feel like. Right. I don't really see it, and I don't know many people that send their kids to summer camp.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, if you watch a movie from, like, the 80s and 90s...
Oh, kids went to summer camp
all the
time. That's
more of a thing.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. So I'm sure there's less and less of them out there.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, how... It can't be, if you're looking at it from a capitalism standpoint, how successful of a business model is running a summer camp? And how much time and effort goes into
I can't imagine that kids, even if it's a day camp type thing, really want to go and be away from the things that they know on a daily basis. You would have to try. I mean, I know a lot of middle schoolers, and you have to try really hard to pull them away from the devices and the things. I mean, according to this particular survey, an average seventh grader is spending about 9.5 hours a day tethered to a screen. 9.5.
That sounds about right.
That's, I mean, but you look at what we do on a daily basis as adults for our jobs. I mean, it's not just always being on a screen because you're playing a game or you're watching something on social media. Our entire lives revolve around a screen or doing something on a screen, whether it's our phone or whether it's looking something up, whether it's for us editing audio, editing video, or any of that. We're always tethered to a screen. So it's interesting that kids are already at seventh grade falling into that same trap. And I think, too, when you talk about these camps, even if it's a sleepaway camp, if it's a day camp, there is opportunity to pull away from some of those things. How many kids, though, are interested in doing that? I feel like that would be the hardest task running one of those, is trying to get the kids to, like, put those devices down to go and do those enrichment creative activities.
If they're allowed to even have them at the camp. You know what I mean? Which I don't think you should be if the whole goal is to disconnect. I mean, if I was a kid and my mom was like, hey, you're going to camp, I'd be like, no, I'm not. I'm keeping my phone. I'm keeping my tablet. I'm still connecting with my friends. I'd rather do that. I don't want to go to camp, but that's just me. And I'm sure a lot of kids feel the same way because you have a supercomputer in the palm of your hands, especially if you have a phone.
Right.
Middle-aged school kids.
Yeah. Yeah. They're going to want to do that much more than go play a game, right? I mean, they just are. There's a lot of program leaders who say that these summer camps, again, whether it's a day camp, something specific to a sport, whether it's a sleepaway camp, they actually help reduce some of that isolationism that kids face and provide an alternative to spending hours on their phones, their tablets, their computers, and on those video games.
No, it's absolutely the right thing to do. I would if let's say I had a kid and I could afford to do this, I would love to do that just because we are in such a digital age, and Gen Z. So, like, you grow up with the technology. There was a period in time where I didn't have this thing.
Right.
I had, you know, a flip phone, and I couldn't do everything. So I think nowadays with social media and everything, I think having that time, they would look back on their childhood and be like, wow, I'm so glad I was able to do that, because now as an adult, I can't get away from the screen because this is my job.
And I find Gen Z very, very fascinating, because Gen Zers are the first generation that really had everything at their disposal. Right.
Yep.
I mean, Parker, you're 23. That you don't remember a world without Google. You don't remember a world without smartphones. Obviously, they've progressed over the years.
Yeah.
But you don't remember a world without tablets or laptops. Right. Like there's just not a time.
We had an iPad for most of my memory. We've had at least an iPad in the house.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, and my kids are exactly the same, right? Because it was just the generation they grew up on. And I think that some of that interaction is so good for kids. And I'll honestly say, yes, I'm as old as dirt at this point. And I remember going to journalism camp and debate camp. But I also remember the people that I met there and the experiences and the things that I learned at those camps. And yes, they were very specific to my tastes and the things that I liked, but that's the point of some of these camps, that they should be tailored to what our kids like and give them a new experience. And the fact that our families can't even afford it or have access to this, this feels like a rite of passage for a lot of kids, right, in some mm-hmm. way. And it's another one of those things that I feel like is getting taken away. Coming up, wrestlers body slamming opponents between bookshelves and then stopping to read a children's story. This is real. It's called Lucha Libro. Kids are loving it. We're going to talk about that next. It's the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Fairly solid, better than expected. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:52 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. You are listening to the Civic Media Network. Brian Newton is off today. Frank Gargano, our senior producer, joins me as co-host. Oh, that was great. Thank you, Parker. Mm-hmm. You're on par today with
the music. I can't see you, Parker.
Where is he?
I can't see you.
What better way to start a wrestling segment? Come on.
That was fantastic. Way. So let me ask you guys, what happens when you combine a library, story time, and professional wrestling all in one? Any
a
ideas?
Lawsuit?
A paper cut?
It's actually...
an in-school suspension?
What it actually is a new program called Lucha Libro, and it is doing exactly that, bringing wrestling rings and children's books together so that kids get excited about reading. And obviously, very unusual, but families are loving this new program. This program combines live wrestling matches, story time, and audience participation, creating an experience that is like part library event and part wrestling event all at the same time. In fact, you'll love this. Wrestlers perform in a full-sized ring set up among library bookshelves, complete with entrance music, costumes, and theatrical storylines. Between wrestling matches, performers then read children's books aloud and interact with the very young audience members. One fan favorite goes by the stage name of Llama Jack. He reads from the popular Llama book series before he jumps back into the wrestling ring. Now, this program is designed to reach kids who might not be drawn to traditional reading programs. I love this, and shows that books and learning can be fun. Now, what I appreciate about this the most is it obviously is very unorthodox. I had a very mm-hmm. reluctant reader. My Dexter, in fact, my husband did not think Dexter could read until he was about 6 years old. While in fact, Dexter had been reading for almost 3 years. Dexter was very self-conscious because if he couldn't say his R's really well when he was very mm-hmm. little. And so if he mispronounced something or if he got a word wrong, he was very self-conscious.
I get it.
So my mom and my husband did not thought there was something seriously wrong with him, that he could not read. In fact, he read to his brother and me all the time. And we heard all of the Llama books, and we heard all of the Pigeon books, the Pigeon series, if you remember those.
I remember that.
So good.
I remember seeing it.
Pigeons are great. So we would read all of those. And then when he was about six, he finally ventured out to one day in his squeaky little tiny voice read aloud to his dad. And he was like, "See, Dad, I can read." So I understand reluctant readers, and I think that if there is a program that helps them, it's why libraries also bring in, reading dogs, because it calms a kiddo's mind, helps them concentrate. There's a confidence level that they don't normally have. So, whether it's reading dogs, whether it's something else, or it's, people wrestling in a ring, getting kids excited about reading, I think that's awesome. I think this is cool.
I think it's awesome. I'm going to play devil's advocate here. Do you think this is going to have the opposite effect where it's like, I'm picturing a crowd of kids watching this go down. Like, aren't little kids
more
amped up?
So they want to body slam?
Yeah, I don't want to read now. I want to go body slam somebody. Me and this other kid, me and Tyler are going to go wrestle now. I'm not reading the book.
What I love about this is I was watching some of the videos from some of these events, and I was looking at some of the photos. I mean, these characters, we'll say, go full out into this. But then they get done, and they get down in the ring, and they literally pull up like a stool or a chair, and they're like, all right, let's read. I mean, it is the craziest thing I've ever seen. So you go from having these kids totally amped up, cheering and excited, then to like this moment where they're like, oh, now my favorite wrestler who just put a guy through the ring is now going to read a book to me. It's actually hilarious.
Llama Jack just threw some other dude into a table. It's time to go read a paragraph or two.
I don't know if it's like WWE style, but I think they keep it in the ring. But at any rate, organizers say that the goal of this is to improve literacy, but also to help libraries attract new visitors and create positive experiences for families. As you can imagine, the attendance at libraries in the modern age of 2026 with everything at our fingertips, and the fact that we can read on devices, a little lower than it used to be. The concept was created just a couple of years ago because organizers were invited to put on a wrestling-themed event at a local library. And since that time, this idea just started to expand. More than 40 library events are planned across California, because right now it's only in California. More than 40 library events are planned just this year. They are starting to expand to states outside of California. The events draw large crowds, usually kids, parents, maybe even wrestling fans all at the same time. Imagine, though, if you're a wrestling fan and all of a sudden you show up at your local library thinking there's going to be a free event, and then you learn that they're going to read the Llama Llama book series to you in between. That's got to be a little disappointing.
How many? No, I'm not going to ask this question.
I feel like you should, maybe.
I'm curious. I'm genuinely asking. This is out of curiosity.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
How many WWE fans are walking into the local library just on a ho-hum Tuesday?
Well, you never know.
And I am somebody that does not walk into a local library ever, so I'm going to put that out there and qualify it with that. But it could happen.
I see
where you're coming from.
It could
Look,
happen.
Whatever, you know, with literacy being what it is in this country and – you know, getting kids to read, whatever helps, whatever gets them excited to maybe dive into a book, improve their reading skills, I think it's great.
I always love when there's an unorthodox way of doing things that we never thought about, and then people get excited about it. I think that's always the beauty of programs like this, because whoever thought about pairing wrestling with reading? Nobody.
Whoever thought about pairing Broadway and acrobatics with baseball? Am I right?
Oh, man.
It always comes back to the bananas, Parker.
It does.
Rent free in your head.
Always back to bananas.
Truly.
Well, we made it. We made it. A show without Brian. We did it. Thank you so much for listening today. You are listening to the Civic Media Network. Stephanie Miller coming up next. And don't forget, another chance for you to qualify in our multi-state text to win contest, also at 9:00. Thanks for listening to Daybreak.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.